found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's. It's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is... Did that not work? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sorry. I was asleep. I was jamming.
Jamming
out with the music, because Warp 11's awesome.
I love Warp
11. And so I'm Guy, and I'm here too.
And I'm David Duncan, if I didn't say that before.
Yeah.
And Andrew Dume, I'm here too.
Welcome, Andrew Dume. He has been on previous episodes such as The Doctors and The Pale Moonlight.
Yes.
And as always, this is your weekly shot of Star Trek. And the news was we've got a third trailer for Star Trek, which they said they weren't going to do, which I'm happy they did.
Yeah, I actually am too. Well, that first trailer wasn't well received.
Well, the first trailer was a teaser, which I don't even know why they're calling it a trailer. The second one they claimed was their last trailer, which we kind of, you know, coughed and made fun of a little bit, saying, "What do you mean it's your first trailer?" But then they surprised us with a third trailer featuring Rihanna's Sledgehammer, which I think she actually wrote for the movie.
Yeah, I think she did too. She's apparently a Trekkie, so good on her.
Oh, yeah, that scores her a bunch of points for me, and I went and actually followed her on Twitter with the Synthaholics account today and gave her LLAP.
Yeah.
And the music, it works really well with the trailer, I thought. I just felt like it had some really good beats, and just the way it synced up with the footage on the trailer was just really well done.
I agree. And it's feeling much more exciting as a movie now. That first trailer really did not do them any justice. Which is funny because I don't think Simon Pegg really particularly cared for the trailer either.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, there's more to it than that. Just hang on. And I really like some of the TV spots that they've got going on now, where they've got like you know Kirk like, oh, we're gonna go out there, and Bones is like, oh, I bet there's a bunch of things that want to kill us, you know, out there, and Kirk's like, oh, well, you know, that's, you know, thanks for bringing that up. And then, and there's a part where Kirk and Spock in the turbo lift, and Kirk's like, I think we work really well together. And Spock's like, indeed we do, or something like that. And then they show them like fighting in the corridors, like, you know, like giving each other hand signals and stuff like that during the invasion. So, and then, you know, at the end, it's got Bones saying, you know, you guys want to go out there? And then both Kirk and Spock are like, yes. But this is one of the TV spots, not the new trailer, but the TV spots are pretty cool. I like that little interplay between all the characters and the TV spots.
I agree.
But go ahead, Andrew.
I think it's going to kind of be a little closer to that Bones, Spock, Kirk dynamic they had in the original series. I think it's going to be closer to that.
Oh, yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, Simon Pegg's an old-school Trekkie, so hopefully we've got some great, great stuff going on with him.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of hopes, high hopes for Simon. I just bought my tickets, so the Alamo Drafthouse here in Denver is doing – actually, all of the Alamo Drafthouses across the nation, so if you happen to have an Alamo near you – they're doing a little promotion that if you go on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, they are selling a special edition glass, which has like the Enterprise and stuff on it, and a little like, I guess it's a booklet on the 50th anniversary, which has some interesting tidbits in it. So there you go, Alamo Drafthouse, I'm promoting you. Give me free tickets.
that would be awesome.
Well, we love the Alamo Drafthouse. All jokes aside, I love this place. It's really great. It's got assigned seating, which is kind of cool. So you're guaranteed to get your seat once you bought the ticket. And they serve food and beer, and it's a great place. And kids under six aren't allowed at all, period, except during their Saturday morning cereal thing.
Sounds like a great place for Synthaholics.
It's a great place for Synthaholics. And you can, like, if somebody's using their cell phone, you can actually ask somebody, you can, you know, identify them, and they will ask them to leave. You're not supposed to use your cell phone at all.
That is fantastic.
It sounds like a movie theater for a moviegoer, a real moviegoer.
Yeah, it's like a serious moviegoer place.
Exactly, yeah.
But the cool part is that they do, instead of previews in front of their movies, although I think they do like the normal previews, but prior to the previews, they've got like these people who will go out onto the web and pull together things that are similar and put them on there. For example, when I went to see Pacific Rim, they put all of these Godzilla shorts and stuff on there and you know, Voltron, and, you know, it was great. Just little pieces and bits and pieces of big robots and giant kaiju, which fit perfectly. So I'm curious to see what they'll put in Star Trek.
A bunch of Lost in Space stuff, probably.
Yeah, probably. Or probably they might put some of the fan films in front of it.
Especially with all the stuff going on with the fan films.
Yeah.
That's one thing I don't want to get into yet, talking about that, because that's all sorts of disappointing. And I haven't finished listening to the Engage official Star Trek podcast, where they had the CBS representative. I'm only about halfway through that, so don't want to talk about that quite yet. But today,
we might talk about it next week.
Yes, because next week we have two guests coming on, so that might two guests from a fan film coming on, so that might creep up in the conversation next time. So we're doing a listener request today.
Listener request.
Yes. From Dave Kish, he has asked us to each make a Starship crew. Once a character is picked, our crews cannot have duplicate characters on them. We're going to also pick a ship and maybe a little bit of a story of what this crew would do. My only caveat to his rules are, I believe we could duplicate TOS characters between the original TOS and the JJ universe because they're fundamentally different people. In this universe. I mean, they have the same roles, but they're very, very different people. And we did the dice rolling and stuff beforehand. Andrew Dumais will go first, Guy will go second, and I will go last. Thanks all for taking all the best parts, guys.
You're welcome.
All right, we're going to start off with the comm. You know, I mean, not comm, but I mean like a helm/navigator.
Navigation. I am going to go with Data on that one, just because he's an android. He's got the computing power behind him for all the mathematical whatever he's going to have to do to fly that ship correctly.
You're squandering Data.
Squandering Data at the helm?
How am I squandering Data here?
He's third in command of the USS Enterprise.
Yeah, that puts him at the helm. Yeah, Jordy. There you go. Okay, well, so you've got Data at the helm and navigation. I'm gonna pick Ensign Ro, because she's cool.
And she'll fight everyone in between the
plotting
courses.
And she'll fight everybody, man. Because, I mean, really, you know, she's like survival of the fittest girl, right? Because she was our prototype Bajoran. So, yeah, I'm going to go for Ensign Ro, and then she'll just beat people. If they want to try to take the helm from her, it's not happening. She'll shoot them.
And make them
There's
dead.
My reasoning.
I'm going with JJ Universe Sulu. Because
JJ Universe Sulu.
Yes, because in that most recent trailer, where he's like flying through fire with a warp 4 older than the NX-01 type ship, that's got to be pretty impressive flying skill, since he's like outmaneuvering those itty bitty drone ships that like tore apart the Enterprise earlier in the film.
We're talking about the Franklin, which apparently has a motorcycle garage in the front.
Yes,
I've been looking at the deck plans.
All two decks it has.
All two decks. I actually kind of think that's cool. I mean, and at first I wasn't sure about the Franklin, but now that I've been warming up to it.
I mean, I think it's a cool looking ship, but I mean, I just can't believe how tiny it is. I mean, the NX-01 I think was at least 6 or 7 decks.
The Raven wasn't exactly a massive machine either, nor are any of the runabouts. I mean, there's got to be little guys.
Well, yeah, but you know, runabouts are just glorified shuttlecrafts. With, like, a sleeping quarters in them.
Voyager was a pretty small ship, too.
Voyager did have at least, I think, 12 decks.
It really? Oh.
It had at least 12 decks. Voyager's about as big as like it's about as long as TOS Enterprise when you look at the starship schematics.
Says me, I'm about to consult the infamous.
I mean, TOS Enterprise
blueprint.
TOS Enterprise
Let's look
might
at the
be
L cars. Yeah, yeah.
TOS Enterprise.
Well, no, I'm not looking at the TOS Enterprise. I'm looking at the L cars blueprint. Did you know that there was a saucer set for it? Holy cow! There is a saucer set for it.
I think all.
Who knew?
I think they all had saucer set. Supposedly, even you know, TOS Enterprise had saucer set. Just it didn't ever reconnect if you you know, disconnected
14
it.
Decks. So there we go. No, I just. The Voyager
is such of Deck 14.
Consolidated frame. I don't know. It feels like to me it should have not had a saucer set, but it does. It has a saucer set. Hmm.
You got to have something to protect you from a warp core breach.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess that's true. And I guess if you look at it, it definitely, it's got definite hull lines that just denote a saucer set. Well, there you go.
So next we're going with Tactical Officer Andrew.
Yep. I mean, obviously my first instinct would be Worf, just because, he's a Klingon. He's kind of bred into being a fighter and having that tactical mind. But I'm going to go with Kira, just because she has that tactical mind, but she also has the mind of, say, a saboteur or a terrorist, because she was doing the guerrilla warfare against the Cardassians. So I think she might know her enemy a little bit better than, say, a Worf or Tasha or any of those, or even Tuvok.
I would sort of disagree, because she only knows Cardassians. She probably doesn't know anything about anyone else.
And she had blind spots quite a bit in the series. That doesn't mean your answer is wrong.
She definitely had her prejudices that kind of blinded her to what she would, what the situation was, for sure. But I don't know. I just think she, with those guerrilla tactics, I mean, I think in a situation where it's like she's outnumbered, outgunned, she's the one that's going to make, she's going to pull through.
Well, yeah, she also had that, lack of technology, Bajorans aren't all that technically advanced. So, I mean, she's definitely is working from, the underdog standpoint. So I can definitely see that.
Well, she'd be more likely to build stone knives and bearskin weapons.
Yes.
I agree.
What would you go for, Guy?
I'm going to go with Tasha Yar for much the same reason as Ensign Ro, because I think that on my ship, it's apparently becoming sort of a Darwinistic existence. And so, apparently meaner is better. And I think that Tasha could have beaten up Worf. That's my feeling. I think Worf was afraid of Tasha. Yeah, she probably did. And so that's why Worf was so sad when Tasha died, was because he had a respectable, worthy opponent in her. And there she was gone. And he was left with Troy, who's really not much of a fighter, although apparently they got engaged in a relationship, which we talked about last week. Anyway, so Tasha Yar. That's where I am.
I would go with Malcolm Reed for my tactical officer, because, you got to love that Section 31 connection. So you've got Section 31 in your pocket. And plus, he's probably
Read Alert.
Yeah, read alert, exactly. So you've also got, you've got the read alert, you've got Section 31, so he's probably got, you could probably, squeeze some, advanced, tactics or weapons out of him that, are prototypes, and equip your ship and make sure you're in tip-top condition. So I would go with Malcolm Reed.
Ah, okay. That works.
Then Communications Officer.
Communications Officer. What do you think, Andrew?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go with Uhura. I mean, just for her linguistic skills alone, and I'd go with the JJ universe one, not TOS.
Because the TOS, she had all her languages wiped by Nomad whenever he turned her into a vegetable.
Yep. Except for Swahili.
Swahili and English. He couldn't take that away from her, but he took away everything else. Maybe that's why she couldn't speak a word of Klingon in Star Trek VI. She just never had time to go back and relearn.
Yeah, yeah, that's plausible. Yeah. Entirely plausible. Okay, so Uhura from... And I'm going to go with Hoshi Sato.
You both took my people!
Yep. I'm going to go with Hoshi Sato because... I don't know. She really doesn't work well with the theme of beating up everybody around her. But I guess, but I'd be left with JJ Universe Uhura, who's really the only one who could beat on everybody. And so, yeah, Hoshi Sato. I just say Hoshi because she's cool and stuff.
You took mine. The stakes are high. Being last. Man, this sucks. Let's see. So, both my picks are out. So, I'm not left with much. Who's Communication Enterprise D? Troy?
No, Communications is dealt with on the horseshoe in the back, so that'd be Worf.
Worf. I will pick Worf as I will pick Worf as my communications officer. Because he'll just tell everyone to go away. I won't have to take any phone calls.
Right. You won't have to mess with anything, because Worf will be like, go away.
So, joke answer is Worf, but, you know, if it wasn't taken, I would go with Hoshi, because the reason I would go with Hoshi is because there is no universal translator. She's figuring this stuff out on the fly. She is amazing. So, but Worf, he'll just tell everyone to go away. Fortunately, the universal translators are around at this point.
Yep, you've got universal translators. Okay, so next position would be engineering. Chief engineer,
I'm going with O'Brien from DS9.
Yep.
I think he's a genius. Geordi got a lot of credit on Enterprise D, but honestly, he was working with Starfleet, Cardassian, Bajoran, and he somehow made that station run. So I'm going with O'Brien.
Sounds good. O'Brien it is.
That would be my choice.
I'm going to go with B'Elanna. Nice. Back to my theme of beating on people. I guess Hoshi must, like, spend all of her time on my ship hiding. We're getting, like, aggressive on this team here.
That's all she did in Enterprise anyway. She just, like, if she wasn't required to go to the bridge, she pretty much hid.
Yeah, she just hid. So, yeah, so I've got B'Elanna on my engineering here. So, there you go.
I would have to go with Scotty, because you can't go wrong with the original Miracle Worker.
Yep. I agree.
Even though
he lies about his times, it doesn't matter. He gets stuff done, and he makes stuff out of duct tape. He's like the MacGyver of engineering.
Yeah, he was the original MacGyver. I mean, really?
Technically, he was the original MacGyver. MacGyver copied, Scotty.
Yeah. So then we move up then to our next position, which is medical. What you got, Andrew?
I'm gonna go with Bashir because he's genetically enhanced. He's got the he did have a connection with Section 31, I believe, and yeah, I mean,
that's your Section 31 in. It's always good to have a Section 31 in.
Yep. So
it's interesting that there's two characters that have a Section 31 in. Now that I think about it, I'm like, never thought of that before. Go ahead, Andrew. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Bashir's a good call.
He's genetically enhanced, so he's super intelligent. And I don't know.
He's doing 3PO-like calculations in his head.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, if O'Brien's going to be the chief engineer, then he's going to have to have his buddy Bashir there.
Well, because they've got to go to the Alamo together and have their quality time. Andrew's a longtime listener of the show. He knows all about the Alamo. So if you don't know about the Alamo, you should go back to listen to episode 9.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to go with Dr. Salar.
Oh, I love Dr. Salar.
Me too. Played by an awesome actress, no less.
Susie Plaxen.
Who played Kalar.
Who I also loved Kalar.
Yeah, well, I think we just kind of like Susie Plaxen. So I think we're kind of
probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, I'm going to go for Dr. Salar because on my ship, we have a whole lot of people who are, like...
beating each other up.
We've got B'Elanna, so, you know, you have to be able to hold her down to give her an injection of any sort, so we need a Vulcan.
You need the impartial, you know, logic to...
We need the impartial logic. We have a lot of radical engineering B'Elanna Torres, so...
Well, you know, you can...
We need our impartial logic.
She can, you know, just nerve pinch B'Elanna, and then she doesn't even need to sedate her. She just nerve pinch, and then she can do what she needs to do.
Yeah.
She'll save Starfleet a whole bunch of medicine bills.
Yeah, she would. So, my choice is Dr. Salar. What do you got, David?
My choice is the Doctor.
Because
EMH. EMH. Only, not the any EMH, the Doctor from Voyager. Because the Doctor from Voyager was left on forever. He gave himself all sorts of, you know, enhancements.
And upgrades.
And he's like, you know, an expert on the Borg. You know, more than anyone else. And plus, he's got, like, every single Doctor's, you know, knowledge pretty much built into him, you know, from the previous, you know, probably hundreds of years. So he is, like, the encyclopedic knowledge of Doctordom.
Yeah, but just don't keep him on too long, otherwise he's going to break down. So
no, they kept him on for 7 years. They got around that. Doctor's good.
I think his mobile emitter helped him a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't he lose some of his knowledge because he was trying to learn opera, if I remember correctly?
No.
Or he was listening to opera?
I don't think he didn't lose anything, I don't think. Or if he lost it, I'm sure he got it back from his, like, backups.
Yeah. There was something with the hologram.
He messed with his programming so many times, and he was always back to good as new by the end of the episode, because that's how Star Trek works.
Fair enough.
Everything returns.
Especially at Voyager, when on the one show where things should never have returned, that ship should have looked like crap by the end of season 7. It should have been like
what it looked like at the end of Year of Hell.
It should have been like hobbling on like on a crutch, like one of the warp engines is just a giant crutch.
Yeah, a crutch engine.
The crutch nacelle. It's a new technology based on wood and maybe some leather padding, maybe.
Right.
Limping home.
Okay, so our next position then is...
Wild cards.
Wild cards,
we're going to do wild cards. Wild cards...
I forgot about the wild cards.
Wild cards are... I allow up to two. These are non-Starfleet characters or Starfleet characters that have very limited screen time.
Okay. I'm going to go with Morn.
Yes!
Just because, you know, I mean, he's just a great character. You hear about how he talks all the time, and you never hear him speak through the entire series. I mean, he held platinum in his gut for God knows how long, and that's why he was bald. And I don't know. I mean,
and he had a really hot wife.
Yeah, which good for him.
Very much good for him. His wife, like, taking those mud baths with him.
I love the fact that it was like, and I was talking to Morn yesterday, and he just wouldn't shut up. It was like a running gag that he was constantly babbling.
And then every time they ask him a question, like, and he's right there, they'd be like, no, don't say anything.
I'm not listening to you. I'm just not listening.
That's awesome.
Do
you have a second wild card?
From Next Gen, the Traveler, who took Wesley.
Ooh, yeah.
And
because you're probably just you got to have a pedophile on your crew, isn't it?
You had to take it there, didn't you? You just had to do it.
Boy, you really did take it far, didn't you?
Sorry.
Yeah, that was you crossed the line, man.
There was a line.
Wesley was a kid.
That's somewhere along the line.
he's like Picard. Don't tell him I'm into him now. It's not right. Just wait till he's older.
Oh man, that's
man
a lot. Okay, so I haven't thought about my wild cards. So going ahead and wild card, David, because I'm going to think of this because I can't right now.
You're gonna give me an advance.
I know one so far, but I can't think of the other one. So I'm kind of – so going ahead and
all
you
right.
go, and then I doubt seriously you're going to pick the characters that I'm going to pick. So
I'm going to pick Garrick for one of my wild cards, because it's always good to have someone on the inside of the Obsidian Order also on the inside of Section 31, so you've got, like, two of your secret orders, like, in the pocket.
Makes sense.
And, let's see. I would pick Quark as my other wild card, because Quark, if you ever need something illegal that Garrick can't get, Quark will be able to get it. So I could pale moonlight a lot with these guys.
So I'm going to pick Sonia Gomez because she was awesome and funny, and she likes hot chocolate, and I do too.
And
so
like spilling it, and like spilling it on bald men
on Picard, and that's fine. No. And then I'm going to pick Leah Brahms, Dr. Brahms.
Oh, very good, very good.
Because if anybody can fix the ship when it's down, it'll be Dr. Brahms. She invented the thing.
Oh, so I'm guessing you're taking the Enterprise D then as your ship if it doesn't get taken.
No, but I figure she can work on anything, right? I mean,
that's really, probably true.
She can work on anything. Hey, it's kind of like if you have a car mechanic. Okay, this car mechanic invented the Ford something or another, and all I've got's a Chevy. I think the guy who does the Ford thing can work on the Chevy just fine. So
that's true.
Yeah, so I'm sure Dr. Brahms will work just fine.
Starfleet technology is probably all very similar anyway in the way they do it.
Yeah, it's interchangeable. Your spark plugs are spark plugs.
Deuterium injectors are deuterium injectors.
Yep. Boussard collectors are still Boussard collectors. Yep. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is still a sigh. I'm done. Okay, next! We're doing science officer next.
Science officers.
Okay. I will go with... I'm going to go with Spock from the JJ-verse. Mainly because I think that Spock's a little more in touch with his human side compared to... TOS Spock. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that. I think that would make him a better science officer compared to being just strictly logic all the time.
Okay, that makes sense.
I mean,
because the JJ versus Spock was a little bit more emotional.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes I feel like Vulcans can get stuck in that logic and they just get... They claim to, you know, be these enlightened people, but they're totally can be closed-minded. And I think having more of his human side come out will make him a good science officer. He'll be more likely to think outside the box.
Right, right, right. That makes sense, makes sense, makes sense.
Yeah, I get that.
Did we pick Jadzia Dax already?
Nope.
Okay, well, then I'm going to go with Jadzia Dax. So that's because very smart, many lifetimes of information. If you're going to do a science officer, I like the way that Dax was always operated because she can work with many of these, I don't know, and she probably could beat up all the other people who are already beating each other up on the bridge.
She is
we
proficient
have, like,
with a
bat free for all going on this bridge anyway.
She is proficient with a bat left.
Yeah, she is, and poor Hoshi is still under a console
hiding
somewhere as the fur is flying. Because it's like a mess on the bridge because everybody's fighting everybody.
I love Dax as a person. I love Terry Farrell's portrayal of Dax. I'm just not sold on how good at science she is because they never really show her doing anything science-y. She's always like beating up Klingons and running away doing weird things.
She had more of that in the beginning. Remember the episode with the portable universe and she was doing all the science on that and...
Yeah, she did some stuff, and she, like, you know, studied, like, that pillar thing that Sisko found.
Yeah, and in The Visitor, she's the one that's helping Jake figure it all out and stuff, so.
Yeah.
She does do. I think that DS9 as a show wasn't centered around science.
It was centered around religion.
Yeah, it was centered around religion and war.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Star Trek, the you know original series TNG and stuff like that, there was a lot more.
Science.
We're at Star 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 doing science.
Yeah.
So all of our science teams are sciencing, and then Wesley screwed something up.
And then he fixed it because he has to.
And he fixes it
because he's the Mary Sue.
Because he's the Mary Sue. What you got, my friend? What you got, David?
I would have to go with T'Pol as my science officer.
Sounds good.
I finally have a woman on my crew, not for lack of trying. All my women have been taken up until this point, so...
Yeah. Well, that would be my fault, because I have a theme going, apparently.
Yeah, you haven't picked one guy yet.
Nope, haven't picked a guy yet.
I would go with T'Pol, because she's pretty classy. I mean, for her time, she's got more knowledge than, you know, anyone else on her ship. Although putting her in the future may not be good, but Vulcans are quick learners. I mean, they're basically computers with their no feelings and lots of logic, so. And mind melding. I mean, they can just like, oh, here, let me meet a scientist. Let me just mind meld you real quick. Yep, I got it. I'm good. They don't even have to read. All they gotta do is touch someone's face for a few seconds.
Right.
So yeah, she'd be a great scientist.
Works for me. Okay, cool. Well, we need to do first officer as well. Yes, so, Andrew.
First off, I'm gonna go with Riker. I have to.
Riker. With or without the beard?
Oh, it has to be with the beard.
With not the beard Riker.
And a woman on each arm.
Yes. I mean, he's just cool. You know, he gets all the ladies, and, you know, he's always, he's a man of action. It's just because I guess he's my favorite first officer.
Gotcha.
Sounds fair to me.
What do you think, guy?
Well, you know, you took T'Pol, so I'm going to have to go for number one. Because I will not be sidestepped. I have an entire thing
agenda.
I have an agenda. I have an entire plan. Besides, I think number one was pretty... The way that they write her...
I'm so mad that she wasn't in, like, the rest of the show. I love her character.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, cage. Welcome to 1966. Either the alien goes or the woman goes. Oh, great. You know? It's
like, so dude. Lame.
Yeah, lame.
And then the other woman went too, the little blonde, whatever her name was, I don't remember.
Yeoman Rand?
No. The blonde from The Cage.
Oh,
because remember, they beam her down, and the Talosians beam her down, and number one down, with the, you know, with the other blonde that's already there.
And then we get like, Spock
pick a woman! Pick a woman!
Yeah, Colt. Colt.
She was cute, too.
Or Yeoman she was Colt. I think she was Yeoman Colt.
Was she Yeoman? I thought she had a station. I don't know.
No.
Maybe she was the Yeoman.
Let's see. Yay. Ooh.
We consult ye.
Oracle of Google.
Tell us your magical knowingness that we don't know in our feeble minds.
Yeah, Yeoman Colt.
Oh, Yeoman, huh? Too bad they didn't keep her.
J.M. Colt. She was a human enlisted crew member, Operations Division, 2254, under the command of Christopher Pike. She was the captain's personal yeoman, replacing his yeoman killed in the fight on Rigel 7.
So I wonder if Ensign from the Redshirt Diaries, I think she said she was Pike's former yeoman. So I wonder if she was after...
Colt. Well, it was 10 years between... between when we did
The Cage,
between The Cage and Where No Man's Gone Before, so
yeah,
there could have been a lot of things.
Yes,
so
indeed,
yep, her played by Laurel Goodwin. Interesting. Well, there you go. And she was a redhead, to be fair. Just saying.
Oh, redhead. Oh, I like redheads too. That's good.
Yeah,
I'm agreeing with
that. That works for me too. A redhead, a blonde, and a brunette all beam down into your quarters when Talosians are telling you to pick one.
Okay.
I guess I would have to go with Spock as my first officer, since I don't know if there's a whole lot left. I will never ever pick Chakotay for anything.
I was trying to kind of my least favorite. You into
Chakotay? No,
Chakotay.
No. I will never
pick Chakotay.
I will pick a no-name first officer, like the first officer of like the Kobayashi Maru. Like I, before,
oh man!
I will pick that first officer before I pick Chakotay for anything other than like bathroom cleaner. I'll pick Chakotay as my bathroom cleaner.
Right.
But yeah, I would have to do I guess Prime Universe Spock since JJ Universe Spock has been taken.
Yep.
Our first double.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've hit all of them now, and now we're at the center seat. Who's got the center seat in your ship, Andrew?
I am going to go with Archer.
Archer.
Yes, I'm going with Archer mainly because I think he has a little bit of all the other captains. He's got the brashness and the brashness of Kirk. He could be a diplomat like Picard, I think he's great because he was the first one out there. You know, he was the first one really exploring.
Except for the captain of the Franklin, who marooned his ship on some planet on the edge of the Federation space, but you know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Just don't have the encyclopedic knowledge you guys do.
Well, it's just from the trailer. I mean, it's just speculation from the trailer. The Franklin is a Warp 4 ship, so apparently he was out there before Archer somehow. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
But, you know.
But, yeah, you know, because he was first, and he has a little bit of every different, you know, all the other captains. It was a cross-up between him and then Sulu when he was captain of what was his name?
The Excelsior.
The Excelsior.
But the other day you were telling me you were going to pick Sisko.
I was going to pick Sisko, but I decided to, you know, have one of my token changes of heart.
Sounds good, since you changed your original comm officer from Wesley to Data.
Yeah.
In the unrecorded other episode of this, the mirror universe of this episode.
Yeah.
That totally wasn't recorded before we recorded this one and messed it up.
Yeah, we messed it up. But that's all right. Well, I was going to go for a complete left turn, but I also have had a change of heart. But originally, well, I've decided that in the center seat of my ship will be none other than Captain Rachel Garrett to fit my entire thing. First of all, I thought Rachel Garrett was so freaking awesome when I saw her in yesterday's Enterprise because she was like, yep, I'm wounded, but get me back in the center seat because we got to go back and fight a whole bunch of Romulans.
Just staple me together. I'm good.
Yep, yep. She was like a quintessential awesome captain. I mean, she was like, even Picard's like, dude, you need to calm down. She's like, I'm going to kill them all. She's like, I've got to go back there to Narendra 3. How am I
going? Like, one of the great things about her is, like, she's still, like, in that, like, the brash age of, like, I know she's after Kirk, but she's still, like, in that age before, like, Starfleet, like, totally reforms and, like, doesn't have any of that brashness. Because, right, like, because, well, you know, you hear Janeway.
The era with the no turtleneck underneath her monster maroon, which does disturb me. I didn't like that era. When the turtleneck disappeared under the monster maroons.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I think that was a budget thing more than like a...
It's because those turtlenecks are a pain to make. They really are. To get it right, they're really a pain. I say this by reading because I want to make my own monster maroon. So
I love a monster maroon.
How to make those turtlenecks, and they are not fun. So I could see the... Screw it. We're not doing the turtlenecks, guys.
yeah, it's disappointing. They could have gotten like another turtleneck just to like kind of fake it, you know. I don't know.
Yeah. So I've got Rachel Garrett. I was going to go for originally the emergency command hologram, the ECH, complete with the little bing, 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 bing of his little pips on his collar, which was like the awesome scene ever.
I love that.
But then I realized I was working really hard on getting an all female crew, and I was like, "That's it, I've got to go with Rachel Garrett because Rachel Garrett rocks."
He never picked a name. He could have decided he wanted to be called Susan and switched to a female form. He could still be the line. You know,
but this became a challenge because I then thought, "Hey, this is kind of an interesting challenge." So, especially
when Tasha, people could be taken.
Yeah, with Tasha and B'Elanna fighting on the bridge and Hoshi hiding and Ensign Ro shooting at both of them, you know. Well, at least we know that things are good in the engineering section because even while B'Elanna is fighting, at least Leah Brahms has got the engines under control. Rachel Garrett's like, get back into the fight. Stop. You guys just get back into the fight. So there you go.
Guy, I gotta ask. I thought you would have gone with Janeway. Why didn't you go with her?
Janeway's awful.
So it's funny because it would have to be. I was going to go with Janeway, but that would have been obvious. and though this is an awesome thing, I knew you two would be like really coming up with good ideas for things, and I was like, I've got to go outside the box because I really want to think of cool different ways that are outside the box. So Janeway would have been in the box. So I was like, but if it had been Janeway, it would have been post bun Janeway.
Janeway, her bun unfurled.
Janeway, her bun unfurled. Because that was a much cooler Janeway than the pre-bun or during-bun Janeway.
How about the prison Janeway from Orange is the New Black?
You know, I don't know if Red would... I don't know what Red would do in charge of a starship. It would kind of be sad and scary.
I will kick Neelix out of the kitchen. I will cook.
Yes.
I will cook.
She'll be down there trying to cook Neelix.
after stuffing him in the freezer for a little while.
Yeah.
Cold Neelix is a good Neelix.
Props, though, I mean, you got to give her serious props because it's, yeah, she, as in Kate Mulgrew, you've got to give her lots of props. She's really good at Red and she's good at Janeway.
Yeah, she's a great actress. I'm just not a huge fan of Janeway, and that's no fault of Kate Mulgrew. That's entirely on the writers.
Yeah, good actress, yeah.
Well, yeah, and like I said, that's why I don't like the bun Janeway, because they did the, oh, we don't know how to depict women, so we're going to make her all butch. Yeah, because that's the only way that you're going to write. No. So, yeah, so, yes. But anyway, Rachel Garrett, because I think, you know, Janeway's cool, but she was a little too calm to deal with the fact that I have Ensign Ro, Tasha Yar, and B'Elanna Torres trying to kill each other. So
I don't know. Your crew seems really unbalanced, like, mentally.
Like,
it's going to, like, Dr. Saylor is going to have to open a psych ward for the entire main...
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I think you're probably right. I mean, my crew would probably... I mean, to be fair, I have Hoshi, who's totally cool, and Dax, and that helps. And number one...
But Dax can also be a loose cannon.
Hmm?
Dax can also very easily be a loose cannon.
Well, she could.
I disagree. When she had to fight over, it was for good reason. She wasn't a loose cannon. Like,
yes, she was. She almost left Starfleet and Sisko and Deep Space Nine to be with a guy she met for 5 minutes on a planet that was a blink out of existence for 10,000 years. That's a little bit loose cannon.
I don't know. I felt like that was an abuse of the character a little bit, because I didn't feel like that particular episode was in. I don't think that was true to the character.
But I mean, it's.
I don't think that was true to the character. I don't think that Dax would have done that. I don't think. I mean, Dax follows her heart from time to time, but I don't find her to be
that reckless,
irrational. I think she. Yeah. She is just as likely to leave Sisko as Sisko would be to leave Dax, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like, I mean, you know, and this kind of falls under the purview of, you know, things, you know, the way I view canon. If it doesn't reference itself, then it may not have to be canon, you know? I mean, even though everything on screen, of course, is technically canon, but that's just my view, is that if it's not referenced ever again... Maybe it's up in the air whether it's canon or not. And so you can kind of, like, write it off in your headcanon.
Headcanon?
Yeah, headcanon, which is what, you know, you refer to for your own personal canon. So my pick for captain will have to be James Tiberius Curly Hair Kirk from, you know, the movie TOS era.
Oh, TOS era Kirk. Curly hair because that's what
his wig looks like in the movies. But I mean it's still TOS Kirk, but I mean it's just older TOS Kirk. Because, yeah. You know, First Officer Spock, and it's also Primetime Spock, so I mean they're the duo that has to work together. And you know, they don't have, you know, their, you know, Bones, but I mean if you think about it, EMH is basically future Bones and he's a hologram.
Yeah, he's grumpy like Bones.
He's very like he's got the, you know, I'm a doctor, I'm a light switch, you know, type of, you know, he's very Bones-esque.
Yep. Please state the nature of your medical emergency. I'm a doctor, not a light switch.
So that is my crew. What ship would you crew pilot, guys?
There you go, Andrew. So what's the ship that your crew is in?
Defiant.
Defiant.
I know this is totally anti-Star Trek, but I love DS9 with the war, the subterfuge, the full-on battles. I'm kind of a military history nut, so it was nice to see that in Star Trek, and I just love the Defiant because of, you know, when First Contact, when they go in and attack the Borg cube, and just the way they were able to cut down Dominion ships and stuff with it. It just, I don't know, it was just like this super weapon. It was like the stealth bomber of Star Trek, and I just loved it. It was cool.
Down to having a Romulan cloaking device stealth.
Yeah,
I'll go with that.
It's a good choice.
It is a good choice. Good choice.
What is your ship of choice for your crew that needs a psych ward? Is it going to be one of those one of those medical ships with a big sphere in the front? Where that giant psych ward?
The Pasteur was the thought. I had thought about the Pasteur. However, I have decided to go with the Equinox.
Equinox, it's a good ship.
Because one reason and one reason only, I just had a long discussion with the designer of the Equinox, Rick Sternbach. So I am partial. It was either Voyager or the Equinox, and under the same Janeway, Rachel Garrett rule, I went with the Equinox just so that I could make a left-hand turn, because I thought that would be much more interesting, and we are shuffling things. So,
gotcha.
Equinox. It's a smaller ship. It's a smaller ship, but I think it's a good ship.
It's a beautifully designed ship. I love the Equinox.
Oh, it's because it's Sternbach, and, I mean, you know, I know I'm biased, but Sternbach, seriously.
Oh, I would have...
You're gonna have to refresh my memory a little bit. The Equinox, I cannot place it at all.
It's a Voyager episode where they meet the other captain. It's almost kind of like the Battlestar Galactica whenever they meet the other Battlestar ship and they're, like, you know, at odds with each other. It's a two-part episode, which is, like, awful. I think Ron Moore actually worked on it. And it's a Voyager episode actually called Equinox.
Yeah, it's Equinox 1 and 2.
And, like, there's a huge betrayal between, like Janeway and Chakotay in this episode. Like, backstabby, huge betrayal. And, like, Ronald D. Moore, I think, was actually working on Voyager at this time. He didn't work on it for very long. And I remember reading something that he wrote saying, like, that this is a betrayal to your watchers. No one will ever believe this. Because,
yeah,
like,
it was...
because they just, like, at the, you know, there's a huge, like, betrayal. And then at the very end of the second episode, they're best buds again. I'm like, no, there's no way you can repair that. Like,
yeah, it was the last episode of season 5 and the first episode of season 6. So it was the two-parter that ended season 5 and started season 6.
It's sort of Voyager-esque in shape, except it's got kind of a divot in the front, and it's got nacelles like the Sovereign class, you know, like the Enterprise E.
Okay.
I can actually illustrate.
I don't know. Can you see us, Scott? Can you see us, Andrew?
I can't. I don't have any video.
Oh, he doesn't have any video.
Never mind. I can't illustrate.
But yeah, like just Google Equinox, you know, and it'll come up in USS Equinox, and it's actually the episode of Voyager.
And in fact, I will hold up my picture, even though you cannot see.
It's a beautiful picture.
It is a beautiful picture, and it's autographed by Rick Sternbach. So, I mean, that's my
episode. It's season 5, episode 26. It's like,
yes,
it's the season ender opener for season 6 going to season 7, or 5 going to season 6.
Right. So it's so anyway, I go for the Equinox,
and I'm also going for one of those one-off ships you saw in Voyager. I'm going for the Prometheus, the USS Prometheus. Yes, the tri-attack.
Also, I believe ship. That was designed by Rick Sternbach, just saying.
I love that ship, and, you know, I didn't get to build the exact same crew last time I did this, because me and Aaron didn't have the rule last time where we couldn't, you know, use duplicate characters, but I picked the ship also last time, and I also had Kirk as my captain, so my reason is Kirk is a tactician, and no one I know in Starfleet could better use that ship than James Tiberius Kirk.
Right.
Where it splits apart into three parts, and like, you know, I could, you know, I'd just be beautiful seeing Kirk, you know, at the captain's chair of that ship. As long as he's not cocky and lets it get half destroyed before he puts his shields up. But, you know.
Agreed. I'm looking up Memory Alpha Prometheus because I said that this is...
Sternbach.
Sternbach, and now I want to check it.
Just want to make sure. Sure.
Let's see here. Interior design, commission, appendices, background information. Yep. The Prometheus class was designed by Star Trek Voyager senior illustrator Rick Sternbach. So that was also a Sternbach.
Nice.
Which is kind of funny because I didn't like the Prometheus as much. It wasn't as classy a ship for me.
I like how it's got the arrow point head. I like that a lot. Whereas yours is sort of like a Voyager shaped head, except it's got like a chunk, you know, cut out of the front.
Unless it's the Rhode Island, which is the one that was in the last episode of Endgame.
Endgame.
In Endgame of Voyager, remember we had the future Janeway running away from...
I blocked Endgame from my mind. It's such a terrible...
Yeah, well, but it had a future Voyager running away from Geordi LaForge, Captain Geordi.
Oh, yeah.
And Captain Geordi was flying the Prometheus, or the Rhode Island, which was an Equinox with the cap over that front piece.
Okay.
It's the same model.
Yeah, just a different configuration. That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you guys thought of what kind of adventures your crew would get up to?
Mine's all internal. My show is all about anti-Gene Roddenberry internal conflict. Because nobody gets along in my class and my ship. Nobody. Nobody. Nobody gets along with it. That's just the way it goes.
I think all my adventures are going to be total wild cards because, I mean, I got the Traveler as one of my wild cards on there, and I don't know. I think he could take my crew on some crazy adventures. I feel, anyways.
Looking,
you know, I'm surprised though.
Looking for other talented cards? Boys.
I'm surprised none of us picked Q for a wild card.
That would be too wild.
That's overpowered.
Yeah, I know.
That's a little OP.
He'd have to be naked Q.
Yeah, naked powerless Q.
Yeah, it'd have to be the naked powerless Q. Which, you know, I've got a ship full of females. That would actually be rather entertaining. Because add your embarrassment to the fact that all of the bridge crew would be women. You'd be like, oh, okay, this sucks.
Q doesn't have any modesty. He's like, oh, that's cool.
I don't think he cared about modesty. You're right. So he wouldn't be bothered.
I think the only reason he wore clothes is so he could, like, mock them for the clothes they wore. Because he always kind of did it as a parody of what they were.
Yeah. It's 9 o'clock, so starts
TV sensors.
The fireworks.
Fireworks. Not even the 4th yet.
No, we have somebody in our neighborhood who fires off a whole bunch of fireworks really late at night and then runs when the cops show up, so... Oh, it's really aggravating.
Yeah, we've had some people shooting off fireworks near my place, too. I've heard them last night, the night before. Haven't heard them tonight yet, but then I've got headphones on.
It wouldn't be so bad, except my wife's already gone to bed, so it's just going to wake her up and make her mad. And that's just not cool.
My crew would need to be, like, you know, like in the thick of it, in the Dominion War, going, like, behind enemy lines, using Garrick's and... you know, Malcolm Reed's, you know, intelligence to, like, do, you know, find out cool stuff, and then, you know, have Kirk, like, you know, just, like, take things out with, like, surgical precision with that amazing Prometheus ship. And Sulu just tearing it up, because they probably assigned Sulu to, like, the part with the best guns on it.
Yeah,
and
you know,
I mean, I'm sure, I know it flies itself for the most part, but I'm pretty sure Sulu would be like, I've got this, Captain. Oh, my. And,
I don't know if that's Sulu oh my's.
No, but I mean, you know. A Sulu never oh my's. It was George Takei that oh my's,
yeah,
but, you know.
Yeah, I never did that.
But yeah, I think it would be like a it'd have to be like an espionage, like a, almost like a spy show, because we've got like two spies, and then we've got like Kirk, so it'd have to be like a behind enemy lines type show, where they have to like do things solo, but they've got this awesome ship, so they can do stuff solo,
like Black Ops almost.
Yeah, yeah. Star Trek Black Ops. And I think my crew could do that, because, you know, we got, like, especially if this was, like, a Mirror Universe crew, like, the Doctor could come up with the nastiest, you know, like, biological weapons. I mean, like, just, all and stuff with nanoprobes, too? Oh, my gosh.
I could see that. So, yeah. We skipped over you, Andrew. What's your ship's mission?
Considering the ship would be a warship, we're obviously going to probably be in a lot of battles. But, like I said, with the Traveler there, if I remember correctly, when the Traveler first showed up, he was able to, like, increase the warp speed and distance of the Enterprise. Because he was with that Starfleet scientist who was supposedly the inventor, but it wasn't him.
I don't think he actually, like, I think the inventor thought he, like, was increasing the efficiency of the ship. But I think the Traveler was just pushing it.
Exactly.
I don't think anything... Yeah, I don't think.
I definitely think with the Traveler being the Traveler and the ability to do that, it's definitely going to be a mission of exploration.
Grandmama, is that you, Grandmama? How are you here?
But yeah, but I think because it's also Defiant, and they're going to be going in these really far out. It's like with Voyager. Like if Voyager had more weapons on it, I mean it. Probably would have had an easier time getting home when they got flung out to the Delta Quadrant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if you're going to have the Traveler taking to the edge of the universe, I want to have the most firepower, as much firepower as I can, just in case.
Makes sense. I'm with that.
Just from like a tactical point of view, for sure.
Right.
But I think the main thing would be exploration.
Exploration on a ship made for one thing, blowing stuff up.
What can I say? I'm a complicated man.
With complicated tastes.
Yes.
Just like the Traveler's. Yeah. Oops, I didn't mean to send us here.
Wait, what? You don't?
I don't know if the Traveler would be a very good wild card. Yeah, he's got this power, but he doesn't seem to have very good control over it, unless everyone wishes happy thoughts toward him. So he would definitely not work on Guy's crew, because people don't have cohesive thoughts on his crew.
Well, now to be fair, we only have like three real loose cannons. Of all of them, we really only have three loose cannons, so I guess you could probably stabilize them. It's just that the problem is that it's, and I don't know, would we call Tasha Yar really a loose cannon?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, she's tough, don't get me wrong, but she's tactical, she's rational, I wouldn't say she's a loose cannon.
Yeah, so really, we only have Ensign Ro and B'Elanna Torres who are loose cannons.
That's true, I guess.
So, you just have, it actually kind of sounds like it'd be kind of a cool story if you think of it that way, because really you'd end up with just Ro and B'Elanna getting in all the time to these fights, and you'd have to like be like, seriously, you guys, come on. And you'd be like, okay, Torres, just go to the,
and then in season room. 7 they'd be BFFs and like braiding each other's right. hair.
Exactly. By the end of the 7th season, they'd be like the best friends and
trading Bajoran earrings, and you know, B'Elanna will start wearing one just because they're such buddies.
Right, right. And Ensign Ro would start wearing bumps on her forehead.
Ensign Ro's got those naturally, though.
Well, she'd extend them.
Okay, all the way up her forehead.
All the way up her forehead. They're BFFs, so, you know, it works. So there you go. So maybe Hoshi doesn't have to hide under her console all the time. Maybe it's not so bad.
Leah Brahms will protect her.
Yeah, Leah Brahms is pretty mean.
She is very mean.
Yeah.
although to be fair, Geordi's kind of a creep.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was pretty creepy of Geordi. So What's so funny is it's interesting how our views of the world have changed as a culture, because in the 80s, that was just sad. Now, it's kind of creepy, you know? Like, it's, culturally
it,
no, it, speaking.
It's still incredibly sad. It's still incredibly sad, but it's really...
Oh, it's very sad,
it's
but
really,
I mean,
really creepy, though.
I think it's a sign that we've progressed as a culture, that we're like, that was creepy, actually. That was actually really creepy.
Every so. Single one of Geordi's romances on Next Generation were creepy.
Yeah, he didn't do so well. He was, you know, they were trying to get him to be the kind of pathetic and love sort of guy, and they ended up making him kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And it was really sad, because LeVar is a great actor, and you don't want him to be creepy. And
no.
It's a good thing they didn't go with his original hairstyle.
Oh, yeah. The original hairstyle just made him look like a creep. Not only...
He made him look scary, yeah.
Yeah. He looked like a sexual predator.
He really did. It was like...
If it's not funny, but it is. If sexual predator has a look, however they did his original hairstyle and with the weird other kind of visor they had.
He gets interviewed by Stone Phillips. I mean,
come on. Catch a predator. Ooh, horrible. Poor guy.
I'm glad they didn't go with that.
Dave, Guy, I had a great time. I got to beam out of here though, so.
It's all good. It was great to have you along with us, Andrew.
Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thanks.
Okay. Good night. Bye-bye.
That leaves
just you and I, David.
Yes, sir, it does. That was a fun conversation. A fun what if.
It was a fun what if.
In the world of Star Trek. I hope, Dave, we have... fulfilled your mandate for your request. I made some addendums. I hope that was okay, but I hope it was entertaining anyway for you and hopefully everyone else that's listening.
I hope you weren't. I hope you didn't regret having me along for this ride. I'm like, I have a mission, and it has nothing to do with what Dave was actually asking.
Mission estrogen.
anyway, oh well.
But
I still think my crew would have been awesome.
It's fun. I mean, it'd definitely be interesting. I really hope we do see more women in the next series, so we can pass the Bechdel test, at least, you know, superficially.
Well, Star Trek has passed the Bechdel test for a long time. I mean, it even if you counted TOS, most of the time, TOS even passed the Bechdel test, which was great.
I thought the women at Warp did a thing, and TOS did very bad. It was 30% of the episodes passed the Bechdel test.
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's good for the 60s.
It had episodes that passed the Bechdel test.
Yeah, but even...
If you compare it to 1968's normal fare...
Oh, it did good for 1968.
Right.
But, Voyager
short skirts and you know, almost naked women was also something you had to have as sort of a thing in 1968. So Voyager passes the Bechdel test off the starting gate.
Well, I mean, because you've got the captain as a woman and your chief engineer as a woman, so they talk every single episode and they never talk about men to each other, and you know, except for occasionally. So
and
I mean,
they have names. They have real names.
They have names. So I mean, that's. I mean, I think every single episode of Voyager has passed the Bechdel test. So hopefully, the new show and the new show is only 13 episodes long. I guess that's something new that we didn't talk about at the beginning of the episode.
We learned that the new show has 13 episodes.
Yeah. So,
but yeah, I mean, it's not just that TNG passes the Bechdel test relatively well.
Better than TOS for sure.
Oh, by far. And DS9 certainly passes the Bechdel test.
Yeah.
And Enterprise did too. So I can't imagine the new series failing to pass the Bechdel test. That just seems weird.
Well, I mean, hopefully it'll be like the most consistent, you know, at it though. I mean, I guess it's hard to get more consistent than the Voyager though.
And I think we're also looking for maybe a little bit more on the LGBT spectrum as well. I mean, we haven't had any LGBT members of the crew yet, really.
No,
so I think there's a little bit of hope that there will be something in there that represents the LGBT community. Because we've had racial diversity, and we've had gender diversity that's really pushed. But we talked about this last week that Star Trek slowing down. It's not the first to do things anymore, whereas it used to be the first in the field.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of the fourth or the fifth in the field.
Yeah.
And it's like, well,
I mean, it'll be interesting to see where it goes with the next series. And you know, we actually got a couple people mention that how come we didn't bring about last episode about how Data was fully functional and about the Denobulans and their, you know,
multi-family
units. So, I mean, I really think this is interesting, and I think we'll definitely have to do a follow-up to Sex and Trek. We'll have to do a Sex and Trek 2 episode at some point in time.
Or maybe we should do a diversity, because I think that's really a diversity statement, too. Well, fully functional Data, really, no, it's just a Sex and Trek thing. Which we did miss that one. And we missed the Tasha Yar and her
rape gangs. I don't even
know what that outfit was.
Rape. Oh, yeah, that was a great outfit. It was one of Deanna's outfits, apparently, because she raided Deanna's closet. But I want to do a Sex and Trek next year after we've seen the new show. That way we can include the Enterprise stuff, the Data stuff, and then we can, you know, do, you know, the new show. Because, I mean, I'm sure we'll have even more stuff, sex and Star Trek, to talk about once the new show is out, especially since it can push its boundaries because it's an online streaming service type thing.
Sounds fair to me.
I think that'll be a good thing to visit in a year. Maybe a little bit less, considering, you know, if the show's out in January, you know, we'll probably finish it, you know, by February, March, and then talk about it in early summer next year.
Yeah, they're going to release them once a week for 13 weeks. So that'll roll them. If you start in January on that one, in 13 weeks, that'll roll them well into April.
Yeah, so that'll be good. I'm definitely looking forward to that. It'll be a lot of fun, and it'll give us more content for Sex and Trek 2.
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else for this week, Guy?
I think we've pretty much covered it all. I don't know. I mean, hey, did you notice the Rick Sternbach picture I had autographed? Just saying.
Gotta love the Rick Sternbach photos. And Rick, if you want to come on the show, we'd love that.
We would. Or John Eaves. I've got a John Eaves up here, too.
Yeah.
My Enterprise B. You can tell what I do as a career. Where my Trek fandom lies.
And your NASA shirt.
My NASA shirt. I love my NASA shirt.
It's awesome.
Yeah, well, that's because I'm starting up on my Witches of Flame, so there you go.
Oh, that'll be awesome. I can't wait. But all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at warp11 on Twitter. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. We'd love to get your email, and we'd love to read it on the air, so please send it in to us. You can find us online on Twitter at synthaholicduo. You can find me online at David_J_Duncan. Where can they find you, Guy?
You can find me at USS Tamerlan and now witchesofflame.com and to the @ on all of the above and the Facebooks of all of the above.
We also have a Facebook group, so facebook.com/group/synthaholics. Join the fun. We like posting silly things and fun things and news things and, of course, the podcast.
And we've got Patreons, too. We've got Synthaholics has a Patreon at /Synthaholics.
Yeah, Patreon/Synthaholics, yes.
Synthaholics, and I've got a Patreon, too, at /GSDavisArt.
So if you like our art, like, not our art, like, if you like Guy's art, and if you like our podcast, we would both love donations because it helps him with his art and helps us keep the podcast going.
Throw a buck every month our way. That'd be perfect. It'd be just great.
We'd love it.
Yeah.
Also, if throwing money at us isn't your thing, just give us a little bit of your time. You can go into iTunes and rate us and give us a review and let other people know what you think of Synthaholics, because this will help us show up in the ratings so more people will find our show so we can grow our audience. So that almost is worth more than money at some points.
Yep.
Just a little bit of your time, we would absolutely love that. Honest ratings are great. 5-star honest ratings are even better. And we'll read your review on the air. Once we see some more of those, we'll read out our 5-star reviews. So just keep that in mind. So thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper.
lie till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Woo! It didn't stop recording on us again.
It didn't stop, or it did?
It didn't.
Oh, good. Because that would really suck after
right.
that one.
All like, right, we've got to re-record this one.
We're going to reshoot it. We reshoot it.
I found this on Gunnerum. Gunnermir.
What is it?
Well, it's a performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
And we have guest Andrew Dumais joining us again. You may remember him from the Doctor's episode in the Pale Moonlight.
It's a fake!
Just like my dice I'm about to roll.
Yep.
But,
I'm rolling fake.
Really fake dice for the good of the show. But before we get to that, Star Trek Beyond put out a third trailer, which supposedly the last one was the first and last trailer. And this one features Rihanna's song Sledgehammer, which actually, like, when I heard she was doing a song for Star Trek before the trailer came out, I was kind of like, I don't know. But the song works really well with the trailer. I thought it, like...
Yeah.
Had
a lot better than Beastie Boys.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like almost tailor-made for that trailer, it feels like, because it just hit some really great beats. Have you seen it yet, Andrew?
I have seen it. I liked it. My sister was watching with me. She thought they should have used a different song. But personally, I liked it. It really worked. I'm not a Rihanna fan or anything. And then I just saw your post on Facebook about how she's kind of always into Star Trek.
Yeah, I just posted.
I'm good if she's a Trekkie. You know, it's kind of one of those you get a pass on if it doesn't fit totally because you're an artist that likes to go and do your art because you're a Trekkie. You kind of get a pass in my book.
Yeah,
yeah. I thought it was great. I think she wrote it specifically for like the movie. Like it's going to be like playing. I assume on the ending credits. I mean, unless it's played in the middle of the movie, which I don't know. I mean, it works for a trailer. I'm not sure how it'll work for, like, the actual film, but it would make a lot of sense being in the, the closing credits.
Maybe.
I've been thinking
about that a little bit. And the way that we deal with new Trek versus older Trek and stuff like that. And I think, maybe they'll be changing it up a little. James Bond has always had a song in its opening credits that's been a singing single, except for, like, the real early ones, Dr. No and whatever, but even then, I think it's just Dr. No that doesn't
I think happen. That'd be awesome, Star Trek opening with lots of sexy ladies and, like, weird psychedelic,
guns
cross things.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, like, like, hold a bunch of Delta Shields, flip out into, a four-leaf clover or something like that. I don't know. It just, I think it'd be awesome if Star Trek got a James Bond opener. I just don't see it. But
Star Trek is forever.
With a sledgehammer. Shows you how much we know about music. Woohoo! I would, if Aaron were here, I would go, ice, and he would yell at me.
Yeah, you would.
It's like my go-to. But tonight we're doing a fan-requested topic. We are going to each list our picks for a crew with a comm officer, a communications officer, a tactical officer, engineer, one or two wild cards, depending on how many you picked, science officer, first officer, and... captain, and then the ship that they would inhabit, and then maybe a little bit of story that what they would do. But the rules are that were dictated to me by the fan request is that once a character is picked, it cannot be repicked. It is out of the pool.
Out of play.
Except I'm making an addendum that the JJ Universe characters can be used as duplicates because they're fundamentally different people.
Because of the alternate reality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
That works.
But no other duplicates count. Q duplicates don't count.
I'm sorry. I still think Q duplicates should count, but I see where you're going.
But, I mean, you could say, like, you know, you could pick Beverly Crusher from season 1 instead of Beverly Crusher from season 7. That's just a different space and time. And then, you know, I think that would make... You could duplicate anything, you know, if you wanted to go it that way.
True.
Sounds so, like rules set.
Rules are laid in the sand.
Yeah.
One of us doesn't have a webcam, so I'm going to use random.org and do a dice roller. I'm rolling 3 dice. I'll give the first dice to Andrew, the second dice to Guy, and the third dice to me. And we'll see. And then, you know, we'll basically take that as our order.
So whoever rolls the highest?
You're not going to believe me. Andrew got 2, Guy got 3, I got 6.
Woohoo! I demand a recount.
We need a re-roll.
So we'll do 2 re-rolls to see
the best 2 out of 3.
The best 2 out of 3. So we're gonna have to re-roll because Andrew got a 5, Guy got a 3, and David got a 5. So we have to re-roll again. This is Andrew got a 5, Guy got a 5, I got a 1, so we got to re-roll. Andrew got a 6, Guy got a 2, I got a 1. So apparently I lose. This is the order we would have gone in if it wasn't a competition. So there we go. So
I bet it was best 2 out of 3.
Best 2 out of 3? Yeah, I've rolled 5 times.
At some point in time, I think, you know, guess first. We can let Andrew go first. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So we're gonna start from the bottom of the chain. The wild cards will be in the middle. You can pick up to 2. Wild cards are side characters, non-Starfleet characters, or Starfleet characters that don't show up very often.
So where are we starting?
So let's start at comm. And not comms, I mean navigation.
Navigation.
I believe that was Data, right? And he had the con mostly for navigation.
No, you're
no. Data had the helm. So
he had the helm.
Yeah,
con would be
Geordi from Next Generation. It'd be Sulu. It would be Geordi. It'd be Wesley.
Ensign Row.
Ensign Row.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Wesley or Data. So I'm gonna go with Wesley.
Wesley as your navigator, huh?
As my navigator, yes.
Wesley as our navigator.
The only reason why is because, I don't know.
He's a prodigy?
I've been playing timelines, and he's really been one of the characters that's really kind of got me out of some bad situations in that game.
So. He's got a really high science score.
Yeah, I know.
It's not fair.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Guy, who is your pick for for Navigator?
So we each pick 1.
Oh yeah,
that's important.
Yeah, we're building an entire crew.
Each of us builds a crew. I misunderstood.
Oh yes, we're each building a crew so that we can, you know, see who's is the best. Which is why you know I didn't want to go last on purpose. I was going to let random chance determine my being last because you know there's stakes in it since you know that character is gone. You can't pick the same character.
Right. Well, I go for Ensign Row.
Any reason?
For a navigator.
Any reason?
She's cool, and I like her, and she'd probably kick everybody else out of the navigation chair and then beat them up a lot.
So no one's flying the ship while she's beating people up. Gotcha.
Right. Nobody's flying. Well, you know, you only really plot a course, and then you let the helmsman deal with it. So between the plotting a course and plotting another course, she could just beat people up. And shoot them with her phaser and stuff.
That works.
And she's cool. So really, my only real reason for that would be that she's cool.
That's cool.